Your relationship with your body is the longest relationship you will ever be in. You must have unconditional permission to eat in order to make peace with food. What is your self-talk like about your body? If you wouldn't say that to a loved one about their body, what makes it okay to say it to yourself? This is a safe virtual space where we are going to dig into deep heart-to-heart combos that all come back to our relationships with food and body. Welcome back to another episode of the Fine Food Freedom Podcast. This is your host, Sam Previtt, and I am delighted that you're here today. And I'm really excited because I got to speak to another dietitian today. And usually it's just me on the pod, so you know I always get excited when we have a guest. Before I get into today's guest, I do want to share a Fine Food Freedom win of the week. These are messages that come through DMs, they come through our client portal, they're podcast reviews, there's somebody in our community who shared something positive about their experience, listening to our content, watching our content in some way, shape, or form. So this DM reads, "This might sound silly, but as a fan and consumer of your content, it's really big to see you eat desserts. I know you're human too, but I think your followers still look up to you as someone who has it all together. The fact that you, who have it all together for the most part, ate foods classified as dessert 3 times in a day shifted something in my brain." This comment was left on a video that I did. I did a What I Eat in a Day video where I showed exactly what it sounds like, what I ate in a day. And that happened to be 3 different desserts. I don't even remember what they were in the video. But this comment meant a lot to me because sometimes I think the most simple things can be so impactful when you're healing your relationship with food and body. And you're allowed to eat dessert. You're allowed to eat dessert whenever you want it, whether it's morning, noon, or night, whether it's a weekday, whether it's a weekend, whether it's a holiday, whether it's a work day. It doesn't matter what day it is. And I think plain and simple, it's just important to recognize that you're allowed to eat food. You deserve food. And so if you needed to hear that today, then I am so excited that you're here. So let's get back into it with our guest. We had Natalie Rizzo on the pod. She is a plant-based sports dietitian. And I was thrilled to have her on the pod because we got to cover 2 topics specifically that have a lot of nuance in the disordered eating world. Now, like I said, Natalie is a plant-based sports dietitian. She does not specialize in eating disorder at all. And I think it was so refreshing to have a dietitian on the pod that does something completely different than me. We're both dietitians, but we specialize in completely different parts of the world, if you will, which it feels like. But we're able to have such a cool, nuanced conversation. And I say this on the interview, and I can't say it enough, is that I get a lot of people that want to start running or want to start engaging in certain kinds of movement when they're healing, you know, their relationship with food, body, and movement. And they need to ensure that they're eating enough to support that. And I have always wanted some type of resource to be able to send people to. And so I think this conversation is so enlightening that we're talking about calories and macronutrients from a place of nourishment. And so if you're somewhere on your recovery journey where maybe the thought of like hearing calorie counts and macros is triggering, then I do want to say, please feel free to skip this. But again, the conversation that Natalie and I are having today is not telling you like you need to eat this many calories. We just talk about different calorie ranges and really just how much more people should be eating at the end of the day. So it was such an incredible, incredible conversation with Natalie. And I also got to ask her a little bit about the plant-based stuff. We talk a lot about more performance, but I love hearing her take on that as well, because I get that question a lot from people on their food freedom journeys of the difference between restriction and preferences. So a lot of great nuanced conversations today. And that's what I love about long form content, is it allows us to dive into these conversations versus an Instagram or TikTok reel that's 30 seconds long and we can't get into the meat and the nuance and the juicy part of the conversations. So Without further ado, please enjoy today's conversation with Natalie Rizzo. All right, Natalie. So the first question I want to ask you, I feel like it's an origin story, but I want to hear how you, and I'm sure you've told this like a million different times on different podcasts and stuff, but how you got to where you are today. Did you always know you wanted to be a dietitian that kind of focused with fueling and athletes and marathon runners, or how did you get to today where you are?
Oh my gosh. It's almost a longer story than we probably have time for, but I'll make it short, which was, this is actually my second career. My first career was in advertising. So my first job ever, I worked for Nickelodeon. And I...
What were you doing there? I'm very interested. I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. I worked in ad sales. So this is back, you know, in 2007 when people were still watching TV and we were selling commercials and it was all about TV space. And then with that, I moved over to ABC and I moved it to digital. So it was kind of, it's so interesting to think back to then because now things have changed so much. But I kind of fell into that out of college. I didn't love it. So when I was around 25, 26, I thought to myself, what do I want to do? What do I like? What can I turn into a career? I always loved to cook and I love to take a recipe, look at it and say, like, what can I do to make this a little healthier? What can I do to make healthy food taste good? And then I also love to exercise. And I started looking into going back to school to become a dietitian and did not realize that it was a large undertaking.
Sure is. Sure is.
Yep. Yeah. And but I did it. So I did all the undergrad stuff first. It was like a year before I even went to grad school. Went to grad school, did the dietetic internship. By the time I graduated and became a dietitian, I was already 31 years old. So I was like hitting the ground running. Wanted to really, I studied sports nutrition, luckily, because my school had that. And I wanted to get into that. And I, you know, it's always a winding road. Like you're not just like, okay, I'm going to go work for a professional team now.
Totally.
Which still to this day, I haven't done. It was more so like, I'm going to do some private practice stuff. I worked in food service for a bit. I did a little hospital stuff. And then I went out on my own and basically narrowed down into sports nutrition, specifically plant-based sports nutrition, because I've been a vegetarian for a long time. And it's just something that people started coming to me for because there wasn't a lot of people doing that. So I always say, like, I'm not trying to make everyone a vegetarian or a vegan, but I'm here to help if that's how you want to fuel.
Yes. Well, thank you for sharing all of that. And I had starred some things for today. I love how you said, you're like, I'm not trying to convince anyone. This is just who I am. And for those looking for resources, I'm here to help, because I focus in intuitive eating in my practice. I'm more helping disordered eaters and people from eating disorder heal their relationship with food and body image. But I often get this question from people of like, am I allowed to be a vegetarian or is that restriction? And I'm like, you are absolutely allowed to have food preferences. Like, there is a big difference between like intentional restriction with morality versus a preference and something you want to do. So I would love to hear, if you don't mind sharing, just a little bit about your vegetarian journey of how long it's been and kind of what drove you to do that, and just anything you want to share for our listeners.
Yeah. And that's exactly how it started, as a preference. So I was in grad school and I was learning a little bit about the way animals are raised for that kind of, you know, for eating. And one, I didn't love that. So it was a little bit of a preference there. But then two, I never really liked the taste of meat that much. Yeah. My mom used to have to force me to eat chicken. I was, you know, I'd rather eat a cheese sandwich as a kid than a chicken sandwich. So it wasn't actually that hard for me. But 15 years ago, there wasn't as many options as there are now.
Very true.
And so, you know, if you wanted a fake meat, it tasted like rubber. And I'm still not eating much of that. It'll be every once in a while when you're at a barbecue. It was just kind of like I figured it out on my own. And I didn't have that much trouble cutting out meat. And I just felt better doing it. I enjoyed it. I felt healthier. And I just liked the taste of things that didn't have meat in them.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you for sharing that. And I think that's an interesting kind of segue into how you said you're like plant-based performance. And obviously protein is a very important nutrient for people who are, you know, in athletics or in sports performance. So when you work with your clients, I would love to hear like the cornerstones of what you focus on. And we can focus on marathon running if you want. We just had the New York City Marathon this past weekend. I know you're in the greater New York area. You also have run the New York City Marathon. So when you have, we could focus on runners, but performance in general, when you have performance clients coming to you, what are the cornerstones of what you're supporting them with their nutrition and their fueling?
So there is a few things. Obviously, protein comes up as the top thing most of the time. And now it's almost, there's almost some sort of caveat because protein is such a hot topic. And I'm generally saying to most people are getting enough protein. Yep. That said, if you're vegan or vegetarian, you may not be. So we mm-hmm. have to lay the groundwork there of how you get protein, how much you're actually eating in a serving. And that segues into how much food you actually have to eat. Because when you're running or an endurance athlete, you have to eat more food because you have to fuel your activity. And plant-based foods tend to have fewer calories, less protein, and people don't realize that. So, you know, I always give the example of people say, well, I had beans. And I'm like, yeah, but half a cup of beans, which is one serving, has 8 grams of protein. And that's not enough for anyone in any meal. So mm-hmm. whereas if you ate just chicken and it was, you know, a little small piece of chicken, that's probably 20 something grams of protein. So yep. we do have to kind of figure that out with a lot of the athletes and then go into, are you actually fueling enough? Are you eating enough calories to sustain the activity that you were doing? And those are usually the two basic things that we start with. And most people are not doing either of those really properly, but they recognize that they can. And then the third thing is that plant-based foods have a lot more fiber. Mm-hmm. So that's the other thing that we kind of get into, because fiber, you know, can upset your stomach, especially when you're doing something like running or endurance activities, swimming, cycling, anything like that. So you have to figure out when to have the fiber, when to not have the fiber. So it is kind of a delicate balance, unlike people who have the option of eating animal foods.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, I want to go back to something you said, and I feel like this needs to be like the name of the episode, but it's like, are you eating enough to sustain your activity levels and just your life? Because as you know, as a dietitian, we live in the Ozempic era, and just there is restriction and the heroin chic is back and all of these messages, especially as women, telling us to shrink and take up less space and all of these things. So I can't even imagine. Again, a lot of my clients, I don't work with elite athletes. I will usually refer those out because, I, like you said, it's a very delicate balance of navigating all of the specifics. But in my past life, I did work with sports a little bit. And the amount that you need to eat to sustain, pending, of course, the person, nutrition is so nuanced and individualized. But I think it really shocks people, especially if they do have some type of disordered eating background, which we know 25 to 45 year old women, 65% have disordered eating, and an additional 10% have eating disorder. So it's really common. But can you share for us, and it could just be like very basic generalizations, but just explaining to people like how many carbohydrates they need, their brain and body's number one source of energy, and like what that looks like. Because I think people, like, they'll hear numbers, but then like showing them or like giving them imagery of like what that looks like in food, I think that would be really cool to hear from you.
Yes. And it's very confusing because a lot of these recommendations are in kilograms for one. So that's where it gets confusing. But just even going back to the beginning of what you said, which is, even if you're not an elite athlete, I call them everyday athletes, which is people like me. I run half marathons. I run marathons. When you are running a marathon, and I'm small, I'm 5'3", mm-hmm. I'm still burning over 1,000 calories in that race. That's nothing else that yep. you're doing throughout the day. Yep. So that's something that you have to take into account. And then there's men I work with who are 6'2", and they're three times my size, and they have to take into account all of that they're utilizing to fuel just that. Like I said, not the rest of the day, just that. So it can be 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 calories a day for these really intense sports. So yeah, it's that with the calories. And then, like you said, carbs are a huge part of this. And I still see this, I think when you, with more of like the elite athletes, they know more of, okay, I need the carbs, it fuels me, because they've been training for this their whole life. but it's more the people who picked up running as a sport as an adult, or maybe did it in high school and then went back to it as an adult. And they have been brought up in this kind of diet culture like you're talking about, where sugar is bad and carbs are bad, and they're really restricting. And they don't recognize that just during the sport, you need 30 to 60 grams of carbs per hour. So if we're
well, can you say that again? I'm sorry to stop you. Okay. 30 to 60 grams per hour of carbohydrates. Thank you. I just like want that to sink in. And then what does that look like?
Yeah. So usually we use sports products too. That's the other thing is that cyclists may not have to because they're on a bike and their stomach's not going up and down. So sometimes they'll eat bananas or bagels or dates and things like that. But runners a lot of times use these sports products, which are essentially these sugar gels that you are sucking down. Or I use sugar, they're called sports chews, which is almost like a gummy bear.
Yeah.
And then a combination of that and sports drinks. So one gel only has 20 grams of carbs. So it's more than one gel per hour. A lot of times it's 1 to 2, could be even 2 to 3, depending how intense you're doing this. And I still am up against people scared of taking that in during fueling because they think they will store it as fat. And I always have to say, no, it's gone. It's gone by the time you're done running. It is gone by the time you're done swimming or cycling. And physiologically, that's not 100% true, but you know what I mean. Like the body has utilized it as energy. It is gone. Do not worry about storing it as fat. And then on top of that, your recovery has to include carbs.
Yes.
Because you also used your glycogen, which is your stored carbs in your muscles. And the only way that tomorrow's workout will be fueled is if you replace that glycogen. So when it terms in terms of recovery, we talk about this 3-to-1 carb to protein ratio, which again, these numbers can be confusing. But what that means is, for instance, we always use chocolate milk as something that we give as an example. So chocolate milk has 24 grams of carbs and 8 grams of protein. So that's 3-to-1. So
and the media, you hear like protein, protein, protein for recovery. And what you're telling us, right, 3-to-1 carb to protein.
100%. And this is proven by research. You won't even find new studies on it because it's been done so many times. This research has been
like, we're done with this. 2000s. This can be exactly. stamped, finished, we're done.
Yeah, yeah. And the carbs actually help your body absorb the protein better and recover better. So carbs are very, very, very important, like for athletes. I mean, they are the most important and for most people, for everyone.
I was going to say, for everyone.
For everyone.
But like you said, for athletes too. And I think that's where I hear you loud and clear because a lot of, again, all of our clients that we support at Fine Food Freedom are disordered eaters. So when they have activity on top of that, it's like some of these conversations. Because I would love to ask you, as someone who sees this and has maybe experienced this personally or with your clients, if you're not getting enough energy, macronutrients, what are people at risk for? So if you are an athlete, an everyday athlete, an elite athlete, and you're not fueling properly, you're not like eating your post performance fuel, what are the risks associated with that?
So the low end of the spectrum is the not so serious is just feeling terrible. And then the high end of the spectrum is serious injuries. I know someone who recently was a runner training for the marathon who broke her hip. And she is 28 years old.
While running? Or did she fall?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, just from the strain on her body and the underfueling, which is insane. Usually we see stress fractures.
Yes, in that's pretty
feet.
Common.
But yes, it could be so much more serious than that. So it could be also, if you're not eating enough, you have nutrient deficiencies, especially in the plant-based space. We see a lot of iron deficiency where things like your hair falls out. You're not sleeping well. You have restless leg syndrome. You can unintentionally lose weight. With that comes muscle loss. So there's so many things that can happen when you are under fueling. And it could just be, I don't feel great, but even more serious than that.
Yeah. Thank you for showcasing that, because I think, again, I'm just like melding our two worlds together of we hear this narrative. I feel like it was more in the 90s, but like the 1200 calorie diet for women. And it's like, no, that's the caloric needs of a 2-year-old. And our organs need all of that to function. So then if you're adding the against strenuous exercise or performance on top of that, your body's always going to go to your organs first to get them the energy that they need to keep you alive. So it makes so much sense when these injuries and these things can happen. And it's so sad because, like, when we have access to food, when we have the privilege to eat food, yet we're a part of the society that is just restrict, restrict, restrict. And hopefully messages like this and the work that you're doing, people can see that food is fuel and it's nourishment and it enhances your performance. So yeah, let's talk about the opposite. When you have athletes that start fueling, right, you're working with them, you're helping them hit their macro goals, you know, and caloric needs to get the energy that they need. What do you see? What is the result of that?
Yeah, we see increased performance. We see PRs. We see, and you know, so much. You're feeling better. You're sleeping better. Some of the nutrient deficiencies may go away depending on the diet. You know, things like that. Where I always tell people, I always tell runners to fuel early and often during a race, and that to me means if you're running a half marathon, you should still be fueling at mile 11, because even though you're towards the end, you want to finish strong. So you don't want to feel terrible those last 2 miles, and we're seeing when people do that, that they do perform so much better. So it does relate to performance, and even if you're an everyday athlete like myself, performance matters because people care. They care. They want a PR. They want to perform at their best. And I think that it just makes them happier overall. And that is a great thing. And it keeps them in their sports for longer because they're having fun with it.
Totally. My previous business partner, she's an incredible dietitian. She's the dietitian, the performance dietitian for the Jacksonville Jaguars here in town. And going to the stadium sometimes and seeing the amount of food, but it was just incredible. Like, we're talking again, some of these athletes that need thousands and thousands and thousands of additional calories, aka energy. But to see their performance improve in duration, you know, intensity, everything is just incredible. So when we're talking about the New York City Marathon that was just this past weekend, or just runners in general, what are some maybe tangible tips or easy ways that performance athletes or everyday athletes can make sure they're getting enough food or getting, you know, quality food to help them recover?
I think if you're new to fueling, because some runners start off just with their normal nutrition and not taking into account sports nutrition, which is fueling during the run, like we talked about, and also making sure that you have a pre-workout meal that is rich in carbs to give you that energy for the beginning of the run. I think if you're new to that and you're not doing a lot of that, you have to start small, because you do have to recognize that doing this is going to make your GI system a little irritated at first. So all of that sugar and the fluid that you're taking in during exercise can make your GI system a little bit upset, but you can actually train the gut to handle all of that. So you have to start small. And if you're doing it and you feel like this isn't working, scale back even more. Just scale, but use whatever training you are doing to prepare yourself for whatever the end goal is. If it's a race, or by the end of the year, you want to run X miles or whatever it is, the training is how you get to that point, because you have to train your nutrition, not just your physical.
I literally just wrote that down. I wrote train your nutrition, because yes. I've heard a sports dietitian say that before. It's like, if you think of the nutrition just like you think of the physical training, it makes it so much easier. That's like, oh, I'm, you know, upping my miles, or I'm upping my weights, or I'm doing whatever. And it's like, we also have to train our nutrition.
Yes. And I will argue, I mean, obviously I'm biased, but I will argue that the nutrition is what gets you across the finish line.
Obviously I'm biased as well. Two dietitians on a podcast. Yes, I agree.
Yes. But your body can only go so far if it doesn't have any energy in it. And like, that goes with what everything you do as well. If you have no, we always relate it to a car. If there's no fuel in the tank, you cannot move. So your body can be trained as well as you want, but if you don't put the fuel in there, it's not going to go over the finish line. So it's just starting early and often with that kind of stuff, and making sure that you just keep upping it until you get to the recommendations, because those recommendations, again, are rooted in science, and that's going to help you get where you want to go.
Awesome. Awesome. I love this conversation. I think it's going to be helpful for so many, because I get a lot of athletes, or, you know, everyday people that are looking to start running or doing more activity, especially in my community, but they come from disordered eating, and then they start to heal their relationship with food. and their body and movement, and then they want to start activity, but they're fearful because they don't want to fall back into disordered patterns, and they want to make sure that they are nourishing their body. So this will be such an incredible resource to be able to send them and to educate them, and of course to get access to you as well. So for those listening, what is the best place that people can find you to learn more from you?
You can find me on Instagram. I'm at Greenleets. It's a combination of the word green and athletes.
I love it.
Because we're plant-based. And I also have a podcast where I go into plant-based sports nutrition. And I also have a website where there's some recipes there. So feel free to find me and ask me questions. I love helping people fuel their fitness with plants. That's kind of my tagline.
I love that. I love that. Well, thank you so much for joining us. People that want to take up running, any tips or tangible takeaway is that they can start to implement to make sure they're getting what they need.
Yeah. I would also suggest that runners focus on recovery nutrition. And okay. I think this is the part that people overlook a lot because they think of, what am I going to eat before the run? What am I going to eat during the run? But then they don't realize afterwards you also have to recover. And a lot of times you're tired and you don't want to prepare a meal. So it's really cool. I partnered with CookUnity, which is actually a meal delivery service that connects customers with chef-created ready-to-eat meals. Essentially, you order from them and you get a meal that a chef created and it's ready to eat. You just have to heat it up. It's absolutely delicious. And they have a fitness fuel line, which is really cool, that I actually created, or I picked all of the recipes on that fitness fuel line specifically for runners and other endurance athletes that go back, like we said before, have more carbs, have the protein you need to recover, not too much fiber, not ingredients that are going to irritate your stomach while you're doing endurance activity. So that's a good resource if you're the type of person who doesn't really want to cook, but you definitely need that recovery nutrition.
I love that because I think we can game plan, right? We can meal plan. We can talk about things in session, but then like going out and doing it, it's hard. And especially if it's a new skill for someone. So I'm a huge fan of convenience meals when it's like easy, it's going to help you implement exactly what you need to do. And I'm a dietitian. I'm not a chef. So I love to talk about food. But my Italian husband from New Jersey is the one that likes to cook the food. So this sounds awesome. Thank you so much for sharing that. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Find Food Freedom Podcast. Every single time you listen to an episode, it truly makes our dreams come true, helping people make peace with food, body, and movement. If you have not already, please make sure to head over to social media and give us a follow at find.food.freedom on Instagram or Find Food Freedom on TikTok. And if you resonated with today's episode and want more professional support, please head over to findfoodfreedomresources.com. This is where you can get your benefits checked to see if your health insurance will fully cover that one-on-one nutrition counseling with our team. And we also have so many other virtual resources there. So again, that's findfoodfreedomresources.com for all things Find Food Freedom and to get those health insurance benefits checked. If you have not already, I invite you to rate, review, subscribe, like, share this podcast with anybody that you think needs to hear it. The more that you share this podcast, the more that this message of intuitive eating and food freedom will be out in the world, which we so desperately need. Again, thank you for being here. I cannot wait to chat with you again soon on the next episode of the Find Food Freedom Podcast.